D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. Pleased to be joined, as we are every Wednesday at 5 o'clock, by our friend Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Hi, Hutton. How are you?
Hey, Willie, Mace, hope you guys are doing well, and Happy New Year to you, Adam.
Last day. But not for me. I appreciate
I'm gonna see
that.
How long I can keep this going.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Hutton. I really do. So let's do some role-playing here, Hutton. Let's say that you get a phone call from Amy Adams Strunk, and she says, Jonathan, I want you to be the lead on our pitch to John Harbaugh. We really want John Harbaugh to be our next coach, and we think you are the man to put the pitch together. What are you highlighting? What are you emphasizing in an attempt to convince John Harbaugh to pick the Titans?
How much do you want, and who do you want to work with? There you go.
That's it.
I'm doing what they should have done, and I'm putting the guy in charge that has done something that it ends with the Super Bowl, or is getting us on the path to doing so. If I'm working in that direction, I'm not going with the first time play caller and doing all this stuff and listening to people that, a collaboration of those who haven't done things in a coaching search before. And I'm not taking anything away from Mike Bergonzi. You're asking me what I would, if I'm Harbaugh, what I would say, or if I'm Amy, I'm Shrunk, what I would say to him. Yeah. We want you. What do you want?
What do you?
That's what it comes down to. I want to win whenever the dome opens. What do you want, John Harbaugh?
What do you make of the list of interviews that have reportedly been scheduled? And again, just because they're getting an interview doesn't mean they're a top candidate. But it's a wide range of coaches, from Kevin Stefanski to Lou Anarumo to Jason Garrett. We all had a bit of a laugh yesterday. But what do you make of the list of candidates who are reportedly already set for interviews? Are you noticing any themes or trends based on the coaches who have been given interviews so far?
This is the premise I'm viewing these names and lists under, okay? And I, and this comes with an addendum here. This is like Harbaugh is off the list from how I'm viewing this, okay? My thoughts. I want to approach it as if Mike Bergonzi is a smart, competent, and knows what he doesn't know first-time general manager. And I think he is those things, but I'm viewing it through that lens and the lens that everyone assessing this list would be smart as well. The Titans coaching search did not start whenever everyone – it starts reporting these names on Monday. They have known since before Halloween that they were going to be hiring a coach. I would hope that an organization with competence would be doing everything possible to have their plan pretty much set in place whenever things are whenever you are allowed to then ask for permission to talk to coaches. Now, if it is Matt Nagy, then to me, this is exactly how they should do it. They can't hire a coach right now, this exact moment anyway. Adam, I would view it as first time in this situation as going through a coaching search. Let me interview as many as possible and then also get as many opinions, analysis, assessments, plans. Everyone is going and saying, here's what I think of Cam Ward. Here's how I would do things offensively, defensively. You're getting everybody collectively giving you their pitch to get you back to the playoffs and on an actual path towards a championship. That's not a bad thing, no matter how long this takes.
Now, that's
if you have planned this out, mapped out how, and he's very deliberate. He knows what he's looking for. And I mean, look, there were interviews. Jason Garrett, for instance, has interviewed a number of places, and I would think that while he can certainly win the job, I'm not saying here, anywhere, he can sell himself and win a head coaching position. Other organizations have had him in too, and it may just be a detailed plan of what the organization is about from his perspective. I would want a veteran analysis from other organizations and philosophies.
Yeah, I think you're right.
in regards to that. But like you said, this is not something that they just started doing. It's not like, oh, the season ended, we fired their quarterback. Oh, meaning your head coach. Oh, now we're going to start looking for a coach. Like you said, they've been looking for a coach 3 months ago. This started 3 months ago. So
Matt Nagy turned down the contract extension in Kansas City. Like, if you're doing it, you know he's going to – if he wants to coach, he's going to be back channeling. This goes on, mm-hmm. you know, like players are getting contacted to the transfer portal in September, October, November, and year-round. NFL coaches would too.
Yeah, and that's why my thing is, and I said this yesterday, like, I'm done with the fluff. Like, if you don't think that you're going to hire this guy, don't bring him in. Because I think this organization, you had enough time to, you know, you've been in jumpstart mode before teams even thought about looking for a head coach.
They can't hire yet, though, right?
No, not as far as that. But Borghazi said it. I know enough people in this business to know what I need to ask, and when I need to ask it, and in what way I need to ask it to know about certain coaches around the league that may end up getting fired. Sure. So that's why I said, listen, I understand that the process entails bringing people in. But if you don't have plans to hire this guy, don't waste your time. Don't waste the organization's time. Don't waste his time. It may not be a waste of his time because he's getting the interview in front of you. But don't waste the organization's and the quarterback's time, because the longer it takes you to find a head coach, the further it puts you back. And you've been leading the race for 3 months. So you don't want to.
What if you can save time and actually talk to your future offensive coordinator during the process?
Yeah, you're right.
Or your defensive coordinator. What if Kafka is going to be the OC and play caller and Raheem Morris is the defensive coordinator?
No, you're right. And we went over that sort of scenario yesterday. But my thing is, if I'm looking for my head coach, yes, it's good to get these other people in front of me. But my main objective is to find a head coach. That's my main objective. And I understand the things on the outside needs to be dealt with too, meaning assistant coaches and everything else. But my main objective right now is to find the head coach for this team for the next, you know, hopefully 10 to 15 years.
I don't want this to turn into what the Jets did last year.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, where there it's like 19 people and they didn't have a GM either, and they're trying to figure this out. But with a general manager who was just named in charge, like, I mean, if again, like since October, this has been going down for the longest time. Matt Nagy was not linked to any other teams but the Titans. And I think the Cardinals just got involved. Mm-hmm. But like, again, like it just screams that this is, you know, Mike Mularkey was the head coach before Mike Mularkey was going to be the head coach. Mm-hmm. You know, like the interim was, they interviewed some other guys, but, you know, like he's admitted that. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't mind the fact that the GM's doing this because, again, you can – Matt LaFleur ended up being the offensive coordinator because Mike Vrabel didn't have an OC – whenever Ohio State named an interim coach or a coach in waiting, excuse me. And ended up benefiting the organization because Vrabel was able to turn to him because John Robinson recommended him. Mm-hmm. I don't disagree. I'm not interviewing a guy that I have no interest in philosophy.
Exactly.
But if I want to learn personality and a tone set and whether or not this guy's an alpha in the room, sure. Or the plan for coaching staff, that's another benefit to know.
Now, Adam asked a question yesterday after the press conference, you know, what would be the headline if we had to title it? Mine was the GM has spoken. After listening to Borghazi, what would your headline be?
It's official. The Titans have a general manager. Hmm. But I also thought about this yesterday, Mace. Mm-hmm. He did this before at the trade deadline. He was solo at the trade deadline, too. I don't think he was just named the guy in charge. I think that was whenever we learned that he was officially by title and every, like the work pyramid and who's doing what and who reports to who. I think that was officially publicly announced, but I think privately, behind the scenes, he's been running this for a long time. I think minimum since the trade deadline, where he was sitting up there by himself as the voice of the organization, where he was talking about he doesn't want to get into the head coaching search, but here's what we're looking for. He was the leader then too, is what I'm saying. I think they had the GM behind the scenes then.
So, Hutt, what do you think happened?
I liked what he came in and did and said, and how he approached things. It's very dry, but I think he does try to answer certain questions. Other things he's not going to, just based on for any reason. But I viewed it as a very positive move and outcome, because this is the one opportunity the Titans had, for fans, whoever, to see the team actually hire an alpha coach, because Borgonzi's making the recommendation. Otherwise, I think we would see similarities to other hires that have been made or moves that have been made within the organization.
So what do you think happened behind the scenes, whenever it happened? If your theory is it happened weeks ago, do you think it was significant? The need for Amy Adams Strunk to put out the whole press release, "They came to me," kind of thing. Tell me what you think happened.
I think it's just the right way to do things, because so many questions were going to come from coaches, potential coaches, about the structure. It saves having to have the conversation during the interview process or any concerns a coach would have. I mean, if I'm John Harbaugh and they didn't do this, I'm not even showing up here for an opportunity. You see what I'm saying, Willie? I think the timing.
So you don't think it was an issue, a work issue between Brinker and Borgonzi necessarily? It was more for how it's perceived from the outside?
The end of the work week and then the following work week, the interviews were going to start. I think the press release was just to make it officially put out there by everyone. And there are certain, media members who initially had it, So like I viewed it as timing, because of the coaching search officially starting and requests were going to be made prior to Wednesday. So you want requests accepted. and I took it as that. Now, earlier from internal, I think there were certain things that Brinker was doing and certain things that the GM was doing. And yeah, I think they at the trade deadline, "Hey, do we need to talk to Chad Brinker? Or we need to talk to Mike Borgonzi? Who are we requesting about trading for Jeff Simmons for?" Like he was always doing those things in that role, and Brinker's doing what Brinker's doing, which, is
we don't know.
salary cap stuff, I guess.
Yes.
I think the one voice thing does look good, just from how it goes. So I'm with you guys on that. Hutt, I want to ask you about offensive philosophy, how they approach this, because they could end up with any number of head coaches here. It may not be an offensive mind that they hire. But what's the best offense for Cam Ward? How similar does it need to be to what they have been running?
Which version of what they've been running?
Good question.
It needs to be the run game while he develops. The new staff, it's head coach, OC, play caller, quarterback coach. I would try to make that group as few as people as possible, instead of the four or five voices that Cam Ward was talking to all year. I would say the head coach doesn't need to call plays, but the play caller and the OC and the quarterback coach are primarily the two guys I need around my quarterback at all times. And I don't need an OC and a play caller and a quarterback coach and a head coach that calls plays. And no, don't need all that. And Mike McCoy even had a quarterback background, and he's walking around doing things offensive only. He admitted that before he took the interim job. He's also around Cam a lot. So I would minimize that with my core guys, and then I would focus on the run game, offensive line. But again, like the O-line being what it was this year, the run game did settle in and then dictate the pace of games. There was improvement, and I think the improvement happened from Cam because of the run game. I would lean on that and get back to the foundation of, let's be honest, whenever they fired Vrabel, there was this line of it was ownership or speaking for ownership, new era football or new age offense or whatever.
They've had so many sayings.
Look around the league.
Passing yards are down.
Really down compared to like 5-6 years ago.
Sure.
And college football too. So I would rely on the run game and defense, and that's not a terrible thing. There's still exciting football being played, but the foundation and the anchor of some of these teams who are successful, get a lead, keep the lead, and stop the opponent that's going to have another MVP caliber quarterback across from you in the AFC.
Okay, so that leads into the next question. And this was discussed some. It's overshadowed, of course, by the coaching search. But prioritizing, if it's edge rusher or wide receiver with the first pick, which way would you lean, all things being equal?
Willie, say that again.
How would you prioritize their first overall pick? I guess the fourth pick in the draft. Which would it be, a wide receiver to put with Cam?
Fourth pick. Okay.
Or would it be an edge rusher, if all things are, because it does look like they'll have options in that area, in at both of those positions, in that spot in the draft.
Man, it wouldn't be wide receiver right now. It would be pass rusher, corner. Quite frankly, is it high for a cornerback? Yes. Not for pass rushing. There's some elite dudes there, it seems. I'm going with the KC model. I got to think. I'm thinking success of what they've had. It was Mahomes in the offense, but defensively they could get after you. And they had the good version of Snead, and they got their wide receivers primarily in like the second, third, fourth rounds. And correct me if I'm wrong there, guys, but they had their offense was legit, and they all knew exactly what was going on. Everybody was in lockstep. And then defensively, high round picks in the first round, second round. Now they had low round. They're drafting, low in these rounds because they won. But that was the focus. And I would build on the edges of both sides of the football. I'm going to invest at corner and wide receiver and that pass rush. And they lack all three. I just don't. I don't think that the wide receiver spot is necessary if you're drafting well to make sure you can move the football if you have an elite quarterback. They're saying they do. Go get an edge or get a corner, and if edge affects the corner, that dude better be, a standout player pretty early on in the season, because right now we saw what they ended with at corner. And it's not like they had a great group to begin with. Teams are going to score points. Right now, I'm not sure the Titans can score a ton of points, but we'll see what they do in the offseason given the fact that they have a ton of money. But they're going to win or lose based on how they draft.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow has been our guest on D-Maze, Ving and the Donick. He joins us every Wednesday at 5 o'clock. Hutton, great stuff as always, my friend. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy Easter, Adam.
Thank you. I'll take that under consideration.
Hey, I always enjoy this, guys. You guys have a great rest of the week.
You as well. 615-737-1025. We will revisit Derek Mason's assessment of John Harbaugh as a coach. As we discussed earlier in the program, we are in a unique position on this show because we have a member of this program who actually played for John Harbaugh. So what does Derek like and maybe even dislike about John Harbaugh as a coach and his fit with the Titans? We'll get back to that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. David Janes reaching deep into the pop punk library today. Ashley Simpson, Avril Lavigne. Interesting choices. I like them. I dig it. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Quickly, because we were just talking about this amongst ourselves. Some interesting news in the world of college football / the NFL draft. Ty Simpson declaring for the 2026 NFL draft. Alabama's quarterback. Kind of surprised by that one, guys. I thought he was going to go back to school.
Against the grain a little bit, because it feels like, and I'm sure all these guys have advisors now, they've probably had some advisors say, look, the quarterback position, you've seen the articles, you've seen the crop. It doesn't look like it's real thick. This could be an opportunity with his talent to move way up the draft board in a year that's thin at that position. So I'm intrigued by this, D-Mace, because I do see a lot of talent in Simpson. I'm told, by the way, his younger brother is actually a better
quarterback
player
than him.
Could end up being better than him. That's how good he is. But for him, trying to seize the opportunity in a year where everybody you know is looking for a quarterback, and if there's only a slow trickle coming out, he could improve his draft stock by coming out.
He could benefit from the lack of top-end quarterback talent in this draft. You know, people said Cam benefited from it last year. Well, Ty Simpson possibly feels that he can benefit from it as well. He was, you know, the team was up and down. He played well for a stretch, really well. There was a point he was at the top of the list when you're talking about Heisman trophies. And then he and the team sort of tailed off. And then, you know, he didn't even finish the game in the playoffs. So he has to rehab. But he you're right. In the climate that we're in right now where you can get paid to stay in college and play, yeah, he must have really thought, like, somebody must have really said, hey, listen, this draft, you may end up, you have a good chance at getting drafted higher.
And we got to be, it's got to be first round
because,
to be worth it,
because
right?
You got
to
figure next year's crop is going to be led by Manning. So, and then you have other quarterbacks that are in there. So the crop of quarterbacks may be much better next year.
Matt Miller on ESPN.com wrote this. Due to his lack of starting experience, the pre-draft process will be extremely important for Simpson. Without weighing the impact of future interviews and pre-draft workouts, Simpson looks like a late first-round talent on tape and is currently ranked as my number three quarterback behind Mendoza and Moore. He could easily rise from late first-round status once he gets in front of teams and shows his aptitude. But his lack of starts, 25 is considered the baseline for success by many NFL scouts, could cause him to fall into day two.
That's kind of the new thing, though, right? Is the, hey, you got to start 25 or you got to start 35.
Bo Nix, Cam Ward.
But if you're going to the grocery store and you're looking for quarterbacks this year, you have what you have, right? It's not 10 guys who all have 50 starts and have the perfect profile. It's a weak class. So I think his people are probably telling him, you're going to rise up. People need quarterbacks. You're better than the guys that are out there.
Yeah.
By the way, the college football playoff continues tomorrow. Miami at Ole Miss in the Fiesta Bowl, a 6:30 p.m. kickoff. Miami favored by 3.5 at State Farm Stadium in Glendale, Arizona. The big news in the NFL yesterday, the shockwaves are still being felt more than 24 hours later. The Baltimore Ravens fired John Harbaugh after 18 seasons. And earlier in the program, Derek, who played for John Harbaugh for 3 seasons, laid out the pros and the cons of being coached by John Harbaugh and his potential fit. Derek, I want to recap those pros and cons. Willie hasn't heard them. Some of our listeners may not have heard them. So let's recap those pros and cons of John Harbaugh.
Yeah, and I'm going to sort of give the edited version. Elite leadership, that's there. You don't stay at a ball club for 18 years and command a ball club for 18 years without showing elite leadership. And he's won a Super Bowl. So that's there. He's a strong culture builder. He knows how to build a culture. He knows how to establish a culture. He knows how to do it in different iterations. He did it with the Joe Flacco sort of iteration. And I say Joe Flacco because they drafted him when I think that was the first. It might have been the second year that they.
It was his first year.
Yeah, it was his first year. Because Mac ended up retiring early that year, so they drafted Joe, and so he was able to. They, as a coaching staff, was able to develop Joe. They end up winning a Super Bowl out of it. But then now you have a different team, a different philosophy, a different quarterback. So he's been able to sort of win and win at a high level with two iterations of quarterbacks, two iterations of teams, one led by a veteran-led, defensive-led young quarterback, and the other was more so led by a younger quarterback, a younger team, not as veteran, and not, even though they've had some good defenses, it's been about their offense. So I look at that and say, this is a guy that can build a culture. This is a guy that knows how to change and knows how to sort of adapt to what's going on. This is a guy, like Borgonzi said, and I said this, Willie, that when you're talking about connecting, he was a connector in Baltimore. Again, you don't stay in a place for 18 years yes. and not being able and not able and not able to connect with people, you know, throughout the building. So he was able to do that, and that is one of the things that Borgonzi said he's looking for. He's looking for alpha male, but he doesn't have to be loud. That's John Harbaugh. John Harbaugh's an alpha type individual, but he doesn't yell and scream. At least, like I said, at least not in front of the cameras. I've heard him yell and scream, you know, on a practice field, but he challenges and he's demanding as a head coach. Those are my pros. And, you know, if you want to go to the analytics, the numbers, I mean, he's won 6 AFC North titles. He's won the most road games in the playoffs of any coach. He has 190-something wins or 63, somewhere around there, wins. He's one of the most winningest coach during that tenure. So he has a lot of things that I think Borgonzi is looking for in a head coach.
Willie, I wanted to get your thoughts on, look, everybody wants John Harbaugh. He's the number one coach, I imagine, on everybody's list right now. But I want your thoughts on Harbaugh and the potential fit.
I think John Harbaugh is the number one guy out there. I think the one concern I thought of today in retrospect, because we were hit with it right between the eyes while we were on the air today, but I feel the same way, that for all the reasons D-May said, you'd be an idiot not to take your swing at him. The one thing that I look back on with a chase for a Peyton Manning several years ago, where they put all their eggs into that and they finished second, and they didn't get him, and then, well, now what do we do? I would be careful on how I went about it. I would say, look, you're the top guy out there. Kind of like Hutton said, what do you need? Are you interested? How much would it take? If you're interested, we're interested. Take that swing, but don't go so far down the road that you're going to overlook all of the other candidates. You have to make sure that you have the fallback plan. But you've got to go out. You've got to just investigate and see what you got.
Randy on our text line says, "It was scary to me when I heard Borgonzi say they were going to use a committee to pick the coach, especially when Brinker's name was the first he mentioned." Again, this is what we talked about on Friday when this news broke about Borgonzi being the GM in the traditional sense and leading the coaching search. It gets Chad Brinker off the marquee. He goes off to the side a little bit. I think that was a smart PR play by the Titans, but Borgonzi did list the people who are going to be part of this coaching search. Brinker is going to be a part of it. He's not going to sit on the sideline. So, again, I understand committees sometimes scare people because the Tennessee Titans have been using that collaborative approach for the past few years and it hasn't worked out so well. But, Brinker is going to be a part of it. You just hope that Borgonzi really does lead the search and puts his stamp on it.
Well, again, I think there's a reason. Now, Hutt said they had been made that decision, and I think that's true, at least behind the scenes. But the closer, I think they felt that this was the right time to make sure, before we get any coaches in here, that they know the structure. There is no ambiguity.
It is a hard word.
Yeah, ambiguity.
Ambiguity.
When it comes to this team, they want to, if I'm a head coach, I want to know, like, what is the structure, who's in charge, and then go from there. Well, now everyone knows. It's in print. In its traditional form, Borgonzi is the guy. He's the GM. So if I'm a head coach and I'm walking in, I'm like, okay, at least now we got that established, how the chain of command is. Now they, as much as they're going to have to, they would have to convince John to come here, John is interviewing them as well. Like, okay, what is this going to look like? What are you envisioning? This is what I envision. So it's going to be a back and forth thing with them.
Let's go to our friend Dr. Locke on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Dr. Locke, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
What's going on, fellas?
Hey.
Teammates, how you doing?
I'm all right.
All right, well, you know, before we get into it, you know, what I do for a living is I'm a sales director for a car dealership. Not going to go into which car dealership, but I've got 13, 15 salesmen that work for me, right? And we got to establish the budget. When I have a customer that comes into my lot and they're looking for a $350, $400 payment, we're not going to put them on a $60,000 car. So do you know what we are paying our old coach, the old coach of the Titans that we just let go? You know what his salary was?
No, but he's got a decent amount of time left on that salary.
Yeah, he's got some money left on that contract.
No, I'm saying, his yearly salary, his yearly was $3 million a year.
Oh, it's going to take more than
that. No, I'm going to land the plane, guys. I get it. But what we were paying him was $3 million a year, right? So if we were going to compare him to a car, right, he was a $20,000 used Ford Explorer, right? Now, John Harbaugh. Do you know what John Harbaugh made, the Harbaugh with Baltimore?
I think it was $17 million.
That's correct. The Denver head coach that they gave up, Denver gave up a first round draft pick to get the old New Orleans coach, the guy who just turned
Sean
the
Payton.
Whole program
yep.
around, Sean Payton. Do you know what Sean Payton made last year?
18
to 20 million. So we got to ask right from the jump: are we committed to spend 18 to 20 million? Yeah. If we're not, then let's not go show them that car, right? Mm. If a customer wants to be at $350 or $400 a month, I'm not showing them a $70,000
$40,000. Thank you for the call.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's good.
Well, what do we think the answer is? If Mike Borgonzi says, "Hey, I just had a good conversation with John Harbaugh. He's interested in taking a look at us." You know, and lay it out just what Dr. Locke said. Mm-hmm. He made $17 million last year. Are we in that ball? And
you would have to
be.
We're
going to have competition.
You would have to be.
He probably will become the highest paid coach because we know the Giants are in there. Other teams are going to be in there. Are you prepared to go that high? What do you think Amy Adams says?
If
you got
want,
that cash line
if
around,
if you want to play,
new
if
stadium
you want to,
hadn't opened
hey,
yet.
Hey, if you want to play in that playground, then that's what you're going to have to offer him.
Okay, but what's her answer?
If you want to win, hell yeah. I got to pay you.
She's got the money.
Yeah, the money's there.
The money's there.
But the Titans have a reputation of being a cash-poor team.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that will be a little different in the new stadium. They're certainly asking pretty high prices for those PSLs. They'll have better revenue streams probably in a couple years. But right now,
is she
willing to put it down?
I guess you could always use the – when it comes – okay – outside of the Titans, which other organization don't have that's looking for a coach don't have a state income tax?
The Vegas Raiders.
Raiders, that is it.
Arizona
didn't fire well, Arizona
do that. Has that state, state income tax.
I think the Titans
Texas is there any Texas teams involved?
Yeah, no Texas teams. So I think the Titans and Vegas
Georgia has a state.
Yeah,
Georgia has a state income tax. I think it might be the Raiders and the Titans.
Do you try to use that to not have to pay the $17 or $18 million that Baltimore had to pay?
I think you try to use that to your advantage.
Yeah,
we say that
about players, and that's real money. So why wouldn't that be considered when – and listen, when it comes to coaches, they may not operate from that sort of, you know, realm – where, you know, hey, just because I have a state tax, that's a plus. I don't have a state tax, that's a plus or a minus. They probably don't see it either way.
Right. And I would, but this is all predicated on a conversation early on that says, are you interested in this job?
Yeah.
Don't string us out. We want to know if you're interested. If you are, the money will work out. But do you want to be here? He may say no.
Two quick texts. One texter says she would be for it if she wants someone who won't make her look bad. Another texter says, cash poor is a nicer word for cheap. 615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your reaction on John Harbaugh and the Titans coaching search and wrap up the show. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Preds Insider returns coming up next. I was joined by Alex Daugherty earlier today, so you will hear our analysis of the Nashville Predators coming up at 6 o'clock. The Predators are back in action tomorrow at home, finally, against the New York Islanders. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, right here, bless you, on 102.5 The Game. Let's go to our phone line and welcome in Clarence. Clarence, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So I've been listening. Oh, sorry. I've been listening, and I'm looking at this new coaching search as a business. Deal, right, we have a new stadium coming up. We need to put seats in the state. We need to put butts in the stadium. So I think it's very crucial that we don't get somebody that nobody really knows. I think John Harbaugh, we need to pay that money that we need to pay, if it's $20 million, $18 million, whatever, because it's going to bring attention to Nashville. Nashville is a growing city. We want to have the Super Bowl. I think it's super important that we fill the vacancy with somebody that can drive that. Butts in the seats for people to come to Nashville and do, you know, right now football is not even the thing in Nashville. So I think it's super important that we look at it, not just for a winning coach, but on the business side, that we have somebody that can bring in the business money to Nashville.
Thank you for the call, Clarence.
Yeah.
Listen, there, whoever they choose to bring in, you know, that person is going to have to jumpstart this franchise very quickly. Typically is what, like a try to get 2 to 3 years. But where this franchise is at, I believe, fan, if it takes you 3 years, the fan bases, they may not stick around, especially, you know, because 3 years would be a year after you move into the new stadium. They want a winner the day they move into the new stadium. Why? Because that's what people remember. The day they moved into Nissan Stadium, they had a winning team. So they're figuring, you want a new stadium, you get another new stadium, we want a winning team. So whoever you choose to hire, whether it's John Harbaugh, Nagy, Stefanski, that person got to come in, and there needs to be immediate results for this fan base, because if it's not, they are going to lose confidence in you very fast. Right now, Borgonzi's on the top of the hill right now. People feel good about him. Great press conference yesterday. We like what he said. He's assertive. We know who's in charge. But make no mistake, they felt that way about John Robinson. They felt that way about Rand Carthon. They can end up, they feel that way about Borgonzi. But if you don't start winning, they're going to quickly forget about your press conference.
Speaking of winning teams, Willie Donick was on an international flight today, went through customs, took a while, he got here. You think he's going to sleep? Hell no. He's going to Memorial Gym to watch the Commodores, the undefeated Commodores, take on Alabama in a huge SEC matchup. Credit to Dylan Tovitz for this stat. It's been 52 years since Memorial Gym last hosted a matchup between two top 13 teams. That game was a 74-73 Vanderbilt win against Alabama on January 4th, 1974.
They hadn't played a good team. They hadn't played a good team, man.
We'll see about that.
By the way, I do have the over-under. We did not have that the other day.
Oh,
have
okay.
You seen the over-under?
It's got to be super high.
I haven't seen it.
Any guesses?
One.
If both teams hit 100, I would not be surprised.
I would honestly say 160.
It's higher than that.
179.5. Over under. 179.5.
Alabama has, number one, they play at a really high tempo. We know what they do. They do the math. Give me a lot of shots. Give me a lot of 3-point shots and layups. You're going to score a lot of points. In the KenPom, they are number two in offensive efficiency on the season. So Alabama, they're going to get a lot of 3-point shots up. They're going to score a lot of points. That is going to be the number one thing. Will Vanderbilt be able to guard them? I think Vanderbilt is a good defensive team. Vanderbilt has, by the way, the number four offensive efficiency on the season. As you've seen, they're they're scoring, you know, 90 to 100 points, or at least high 80s in most of their games.
Now, I know Alabama's head coach made the comment of, you know, Vandy hadn't played in, what was it, a good team or whatever.
Well, Alabama, in fairness, they have had a tough schedule.
They've had a tough schedule. Yeah. But when I look at Vandy, and you talk about the sort of fast pace of Alabama, that's why, to me, that Memphis game was telling. Because Memphis was sort of just like up and down. It was chaotic and there was physicality. But Vandy was able to settle in. And they were able to play the brand of basketball that they wanted to play. And they ultimately, it was a hard-fought game. It went into overtime, but they found a way to win. I think that game may help them more than what people believe in this Alabama game.
And I do think that Vanderbilt's, the argument that Vanderbilt's played a, you know, a quote-unquote easy schedule, it was boosted by the fact that two of the teams they have defeated this season, UCF and SMU, had big wins over the weekend. UCF beat Kansas, SMU beat North Carolina, which makes Vanderbilt's resume look better by comparison. But I'm really fascinated by this game. I can't wait to watch it. You can watch it, or you can listen to it. You can also watch it, but you can listen to it right here on 102.5 The Game. Pre-game starts at 7:30. Tip-off is at 8 o'clock. And Willie Donick, a flight from Edmonton's not going to stop him. He's going to be there.
Man. I got very few chances to go to Memorial Gym with all the hockey games going on, so I'm going to take this opportunity to go watch.
It's
so
going to be a madhouse.
I think it's going to be a really good crowd. I think there'll be some Alabama fans there tonight. Hopefully not too many. But
you going to wear the Donick jersey?
I will not wear the Donick jersey. My son Mahoney, though, he's not afraid to pull out the Donick jersey, the vintage.
It's a one of one.
Exactly.
I had a great. This is relative to me. I didn't have a lot of great moments on the court, but we had a great win at home against a Wimp Sanderson Alabama team with Robert Horry, Latrell Sprewell.
That's a good team.
A very good team. A very good team. And we whipped them. We whipped them. And at one point, I boxed out Robert Horry on the backside, and he picked me up, and he threw me towards the cheerleaders, and they called a foul on him. I was like, yeah, I got fouled by Robert Horry. Boom.
Whatever happened to that guy?
Big man. Shot, Bob?
You know, he might
have won about eight championships.
How many championships did he win? And we will be at Bridgestone Arena tomorrow. The Predators are finally back home. They take on the New York Islanders. Willie gets the night off because ESPN Plus is taking that game.
Yeah, they kind of swept in there and grabbed it. Okay.
There you go.
Big game.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Islanders only won 9-0 last night. So they're coming in on a roll. They've actually played really
coming
well.
Coming in hot.
Yes. They're coming in
and
hot.
And they have a very special player on the back end. Number one overall pick, Matthew Schaefer on defense. Yeah. He is a special player.
And they can thank the new lottery rules for that. I mean, the Islanders jumped up the maximum 10 spots.
They did.
To get that pick.
They did. I was saying on Preds Insiders, which you can hear coming up next, as I was talking with Alex Daugherty earlier today, Willie, that games between the Oilers and the Predators should come with a viewer discretion is advised label because it's
going to be physical.
Well, not even that. It's just the things that Draisaitl and McDavid specifically can do are just unfair. And they
McDavid.
Just they have their way with everybody, but they seem to especially have their way with the Predators.
I mean, he is unbelievable.
Does that frustrate you when you're watching it, Willie?
It's tough. And they play again next Tuesday.
Yep, here in Nashville.
That's going to be a big game. You got a 4-game homestand and adjusting back. I mean, they have been on the road a lot. I mean, I feel for those guys. I didn't even go to the last game before Christmas, which was on the road. So they haven't played a home game since December 21st. So they went on the road, played the one game in Minnesota. Then they had the 3 days off. A lot of the guys, I'm sure, traveled back to be with family and whatnot, so that's probably another trip in there. Then they hopped a plane on the 27th and played all these games, just got home today. So regrouping and getting back to your A game on home ice will be a challenge, but that's the grind. That's what faces all these teams that are about the same in the standings, is who can have that mental toughness, who can stay healthy, who can be sharp, and win enough games.
And the Predators played 7 consecutive games on the road and went 4-3 and faced some tough situations, some lengthy travel, a back-to-back on the road, Vegas, then Seattle.
The day of the game travel on the 27th,
they've had some tough
yeah,
circumstances.
So
yes.
4-3, travel-wise, all things considered, 4-3 is fairly impressive considering the situation.
Yes, I thought it was a road trip that could sink them back down to the bottom, honestly. Mm-hmm. But to win at Minnesota, at Utah, at Vegas, mm-hmm. among the wins, and then Calgary had won 8 out of 9 at home before Nashville beat them. So it wasn't perfect. But I thought it was and by the way, in all 7 of those games, they gave up the first goal of the game, which is a recipe for disaster most nights. And Barry Trotz, that was the first thing he said. You cannot keep winning in this league when you fall behind early in the game. It's incredible. They've got to flip that somehow. Hopefully the law of averages says you'll get a lucky bounce at some point, and maybe you'll start getting a trend. But that trend is going to have to change in the second half for them to start winning at a level to stay in this thing and make something of it.
Over the past 20 games, they've won 13 of 20. How many of those 20 games have they allowed the first goal? I know the answer.
You know the answer. I know. I went even further back. I know it's 21 of 26.
Okay, that's bad.
21 of the last 26. Man. They've
15
given up
of 20 15 during of 20. The stretch of 13, yep. 13 so and 7. 15 and 20. It's not a recipe for success, but go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish.
No, go.
No. I was about to say, I have a quick thought here.
Yes.
And should I be, hold this over the establishment that I work out in? Should I hold a grudge against them?
Okay.
Quickly, the place I go work out at, I got a membership where I can go any day I want, every day. But I know that I only really go 3 times a week. So I went up to the lady at the front desk and said, hey, is there a membership where I can go only 3 times a week? She was like, well, no, there's one where you can go 2 times a week. I said, so y'all go from going every day a week to only 2 times a week? Like, isn't there a middle ground, 3 days? But they don't have a 3-day. Should I hold a grudge against it? Nice people. I like going, but shouldn't there be a middle ground?
It seems reasonable.
Exactly. That's what I thought.
It would seem reasonable, but
it's
not.
What I thought.
Frankly, Derek, I don't really have an opinion. Work out as much as you want. That'll do it for us today. We will be live at Bridgestone Arena tomorrow, where the Predators will take on the Islanders. Looking forward to being back at the arena. Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet will join us. We haven't talked to him in a few weeks. Curious to hear his thoughts about the Predators so far, or at least since the last time we spoke to him. Will he enjoy the game tonight? Alabama at Vanderbilt, Preds Insiders with me and Alex Daugherty coming up next.
Be love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that music. Don't you forget about us, because we will not forget about you. Let's go, Vandy, because we will see you tomorrow at 3 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. Let's go, Vandy. Peace.